Welcome to the podcast of the European Society of Anesthesiology and Intensive Care. I am your host, Andrea Kollman, from Akademiska sjukhuset in Uppsala, Sweden. And today we will be discussing the topic, my patient doesn't want a neuraxial anesthesia for cesarean section. What do I do? My guest is Dr. Nicolas Broglie from La Paz University Hospital in Madrid, Spain. Welcome.
Thank you for your invitations.
Thank you. So, dear Nicolas, we're here to discuss a very impactful topic. What do we do if our patient does not want a neuraxial anesthesia for cesarean section? A cesarean section is the most common surgical procedure in the world, accounting for more than one-fifth of all childbirth. And if not contraindicated, neuraxial anesthesia is the gold standard of care. Sometimes, however, a patient scheduled for a cesarean section refuses a neuraxial technique. In today's podcast, we're going to address this situation given the repercussions on perioperative care for both the mother and the child. Do you see this as a rising issue?
Effectively, yes. Let's say in the last years, the women have started to want really an active participation in their delivery process. So they're asking to have the possibility to be implicated in the decision process of the treatments. In this process, the role of the anesthesiologist really is to deliver a reliable information and to find a consensus with the patient so that we, as anesthesiologists, offer the optimal strategy with good understanding and participation of the patient, which is the center of our care. The access to information through internet, through the media, through influencers, makes very important that a good and reliable advice is given by a specialist, that's to say by the anesthesiologist. The parturients should not have false expectations for their delivery. And the anesthesiologist is there to ensure that a safe process for both the fetus and the mother, together with a high quality of care and good satisfaction, with birthing experience, which is capital because this is a moment that a woman will remember all her life. So we have to give a special care on information that we provide to women concerning the anesthetic technique proposed for cesarean delivery. And this is very important when the parturient is challenging the neuraxial anesthesia techniques or have a bad opinion, a negative opinion about this technique.
Thank you, Nicolas. It is indeed a rising issue. So I would like us to do a systematic approach on how to manage these patients. So what is the first step to approach this situation?
First of all, the very important first step to make really is to have an approach based on an analysis of the reasons for this demand from the patient. So it's important to establish a dialogue, fluid dialogue with the parturient and search for the reasons why she doesn't want original anesthesia. For this, a good communication with the patient is the key. Humanization of delivery obviously passes through a fluid communication with the team, not only with the anesthesiologist, but with all the obstetric team, and passes through also pragmatic analysis of the situation before taking any decision.
Did you talk about the reasons? What are the most usual reasons that can lead to this situation?
Okay, let me give you some examples of reasons, even though there might be some others, but some women might have problems with neuraxial anesthesia in the past, a difficult puncture with lots of pain or uncomfortable position for the puncture, pain during cesarean delivery due to a failed block or prolonged surgery, post-operative complications like postural puncture headache or any other complications. Some might also just be afraid of complications that some neighbors, friends, other people would have shared with them. And some might have gotten medical advice from family or friends also or influencers about the subject, which are not professionals of anesthesia and who didn't necessarily give them a good advice. However, some can also present a contraindication for neuraxial block, a medical contraindication, And this, we should detect.
So do you think we should try to convince all women at all costs that regional anesthesia is the absolute best option?
Absolutely not. And the decision must be taken on a case-by-case basis, depending on the benefit-risk balance on each situation. After a good analysis of the situation, it is important to rule out all the medical contraindications for neurological anesthesia, like neurodegenerative disease, neurological malformations, congenital coagulation disorders, and other absolute contraindications to neuraxial blocks. And then it is also important to assess the airway, which is in certain circumstances an important point that can make not recommendable general anesthesia, and for which we will really need to advise, not force, but advise and inform properly the patient about the risks of a general anesthesia in certain circumstances.
So what are the options in case the patient with absolutely no contraindications for neuraxial block does not want a neuraxial block? Can you talk us about the risk and the benefits?
Effectively, if despite the clear information, the patient still doesn't want a regional anesthesia, this can be considered as a contraindication to neuraxial block, and we will be forced to propose a general anesthesia. I say forced, but it's not really, it's the fruit of a negotiation and of a dialogue with a patient. Anyway, however, this should be left as the last option, since it is associated, also the general anesthesia, with a higher morbidity and mortality, especially in case of difficult airway, which can lead to a life-threatening situation in case of the difficult of impossible intubation or aspiration from the patient. For all these reasons, it's important that the participant is informed of the risks and benefits of each technique. So the decision really is not only based on fear and impressions, but on facts.
And we have been talking a lot about risks. So what risk can we accept for a general anesthesia? What are the modern airway risks?
Okay, about modern airway risks, we can talk about population-based risks, patient parturients who are obese and severely obese or with morbid obesity usually have a predicted or unpredicted difficult airway and might be in a position of, well, life-threatening situation in case of general anesthesia. So we try to avoid these situations when we have to put to sleep, propose a general anesthesia to those patients. In case also of patients who are proposed for cesarean section in an emergency cesarean who are not necessarily fasting, we are also in a risk situation in which every time we can, we have to propose a regional anesthesia, even though this is not a total contraindication. This is not an absolute contraindication to general anesthesia.
And what about if I cannot communicate with my patient? Is it better to do a GA?
The major issue with non-communicating patient is, and the key of that is, if the patient, even though does not communicate, can somehow cooperate or not move too much during the procedure. So if the patient cooperates, it is better to propose a regional anesthesia. But it is true that in case of unexpected movements during anesthesia or surgery, these movements may be dangerous for the patient, and in that case, general anesthesia would be indicated. That's to say, the comfort of the patient is above the indication of general versus regional anesthesia in that case.
And what about pain management?
If you talk about pain management, you can talk about intraoperative pain management and postoperative pain management. Considering intraoperative pain management, since the fetus is still connected to the mother through the cord, it is important to know that any drug you administer intravenously would pass to the fetus. So it is especially true for the hypnotics and for the opioids. So we have to wait until the cord is clamped before we administer opioids. So intraoperative pain is necessarily better controlled under uaxial block. Although you can use the remifentanil in case of general anesthesia, which has some pharmacokinetic properties which makes it relatively safe for the fetus, but you expose the fetus to have the respiratory depression at birth, for which you will have to advise, you will have to inform the neonatologist to be prepared for this situation. Considering postoperative pain, it is generally better managed with neuraxial anesthesia. However, the development of peripheral abdominal wall blocks in the last years have permitted really to improve the postoperative pain management of patients submitted to cesarean delivery under general anesthesia, and it is not such a problem as it was in the past.
What about nausea and vomiting?
Nausea and vomiting are also, well, are usually frequent anyway after a delivery, after cesarean section, but they are somehow more frequent in patients submitted to cesarean with general anesthesia. It is true that nowadays we have some very good prevention methods, and we cope with this complication or with this side effect of anesthesia and delivery very well. So it's not such of a problem right now because we prevent it and we treat it.
Another issue is intraoperative awareness, since most people do this without any opioids. And of course, the associated post-traumatic stress syndrome. So is this a real risk?
Effectively, there is a risk of post-traumatic stress syndrome in parturients anesthetized with general anesthesia for a cesarean section, due to the fact that pregnant women are maybe less or more sensible to hypnotics. And if you don't measure, if you don't monitor the depth of anesthesia, you might have the surprise that the patient was partially or totally awake during cesarean, feeling everything and not alleviated of pain, because pain management or opioids were administered only after the abdominal wall had been opened and after the baby was born. So it's a really important and capital aspect of general anesthesia for pregnancy, during pregnancy and for cesarean, that depth of anesthesia is monitored and that we administer the proper dose of hypnotics so that the patient is not aware during surgery. And in case of post-traumatic stress syndrome, you can have some really long-term complications for the mental health of the parturient. So it's an important factor that we have to control very well as anesthesiologists.
And what about our other patient? Because if we think about the fetus, what risk can we encounter?
Well, the fetus right now, I would say that we are pretty well controlled, because all the techniques that we use, we really control the risk for the fetus. The drugs, for example, propofol effectively passes to the fetus, but has not shown dramatic consequences for the fetus if you do a general anesthesia. And what we also do is to minimize those risks, giving or making the shortest possible time between induction of anesthesia and fetal extraction and cord clamping. So we try to diminish as much as possible the time exposure of the fetus to propofol. And the studies published in the past show that propofol has no clinical effect on the fetus, really, when you do a general anesthesia. Concerning, well, the opioids, it is what I said before. We have to avoid the use of fentanyl while the fetus is still connected to the mother and until the cord is clamped.
So I explain all the general and individualized risks to my patient, and she still wants a general anesthesia. How do I perform it safely? I would like you to guide us through all the steps of performing a GA for a cesarean section with safety.
Okay, so The first step really is the pre-medication and pre-operative stage. What we have to do is first prevent inspiration. So you can administer antihistaminic drugs, oral citrate, maybe metoclopramide also has been recommended to try to avoid any aspiration or diminish the consequences if it happens. Then you go to the you have to transfer the patient to the OR and perform the induction. For these cases, pregnant women are considered as full stomach patients, so you will have to make a rapid sequence induction. We nowadays and in our hospital use propofol and rocuronone, but in many guidelines in the literature now, you still have the thiopentone, succinylcholine, used and recommended. So both solutions are well. What is really important to avoid regurgitation and aspiration is to apply the Selig maneuver, which has been quite discussed in other circumstances, but in the obstetric environment, it is still sort of a gold standard for maternal care in general anesthesia. Once the patient is put to sleep, induced, you have to intubate her. Concerning tracheal intubation, Macintosh blades, regular, usual laryngoscopes are okay. In the recent past, the video laryngoscopes have been also introduced, and I think some algorithms will soon introduce the use of laryngoscope as the first option, but still video laryngoscope has been a great advance for the risk of difficult airway in these, risk patients. Concerning the maintenance of general anesthesia, you can use either low dose of sevoflurane or also TIVA with propofol, and remifentanil is an option if the patient has some risks of hypertension or is a high-risk patient. Considering pain and postoperative nausea and vomiting, you have a lot of not modern drugs, but drugs which have come to an indication for prevention and treatment, which include corticoids, lidocaine, IV lidocaine, ketamine, magnesium, and alpha agonists. And there are some others, but still, we can add some adjuvants to general anesthesia, which won't harm the fetus and which will really help in the post-operative period. We can also talk about peripheral blocks, peripheral abdominal wall blocks, which will help you to control post-operative pain in those patients. And finally, a limiting point of general anesthesia is the, humanization of delivery, because you cannot do early skin-to-skin contacts. And this is an important point that should be explained to women. You cannot do a skin-to-skin contact during surgery with a patient who is under general anesthesia. So maybe this might help the patient change her mind and accept to be performed a regional block.
Thank you so much, Nicholas. It has been an insightful discussion, and I hope that our colleagues listening to this podcast find it useful when dealing with this challenging situation. Thank you to all our listeners for joining on this episode. The SAIC releases monthly podcasts on the SAIC website and various streaming platforms, and we hope that you will join us for the next one.